are getting a picture on the TV.
Yeah, go for it.
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars, winners hang with winners.
Welcome to House of Strauss Podcast. I don't have any smart intro after that, other than to say that we are joined by Ryan Glass-Spiegel, TV ratings expert. And look, I know that this is a topic, some people are really into it, some people aren't so into it. I think if you're not into the whole ratings thing, you're about purity. You love basketball. You're in love with the game, and you don't care about any of that other noise. That's fine. Make yourself a sandwich. You know, we got the download from you. That's cool. But this is for the people who are into this nerdy issue, this nerdy niche. I should have also said that we are produced by Jade Hoy. Maybe he will interject because he's so excited that our guest, Ryan, what are you from the same town?
Terrifield, baby.
Yeah, I grew up in Simsbury, Connecticut, which is where your super producer, Jade Hoy, lives. I grew up 5 minutes away from where he lives, and I went to the elementary school where his kids go to. Terrifying.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. A school that I saved.
Is Connecticut a thing? Do you guys have an accent? Do you have a culture? What is the deal?
You know, I think the culture is saying that it's about halfway between Boston and New York, and Connecticut has, I think, the best pizza in the country. That's that's an opinion that was backed up when Dave Portnoy said New Haven is the pizza capital of the country. But anywhere else you go, it's just not going to be as good either at peak or average.
Is that because you put clams on it? Is that the reason?
I don't like the clams pizza.
I don't either.
Can't give you a reason for that.
That is the New Haven pizza, though.
Yeah, the clams and the garlic. Peppers. I remember when we had a summit out there, Jade, ESPN summit. We went to some place, and that was the thing. It's
That's the Pepe's thing. I actually prefer Sally's to Pepe's. They have the white clam pizza, but it's not necessarily as much what they're known for.
See, I just thought it was about that. I just thought you guys didn't need any pizza that wasn't clams and garlic. That was my assumption. But now we know. Now we understand. I happen to think pizza out here is very underrated. Everybody is very territorial about the whole pizza
Ethan,
thing. People get angry.
By the way, there is an accent. There is a Connecticut accent, but it's only detected by people from Connecticut. Like, no one else could know about it.
Really?
You'd have to be from Connecticut.
I mean, there are certain tells. I can tell if somebody's from the New England area if they say not instead of not.
It's so, placement's around for a long, long time. Even Simsbury, like Terrifield, where I am, has an accent. Mm. If you're able to hear it, but you have to be.
You know, I think the one thing in the Connecticut accent, a lot of people say milk instead of milk.
Yeah, right.
Milk.
It's there. Okay. It's there. Well,
I don't have any fancy segue to talking about TV ratings. I'm not Zach Harper. I don't know how to go from milk to talking about this. But I think what we're going to do, I think we're going to start on the NBA and maybe start on the broader sweep of the NBA, maybe transition to this season and some of the perhaps good things the NBA has going for it. Maybe look to the future of the NBA and then broaden it out and start talking about this whole sports sphere and what's going on in the industry. And what I like about Ryan is he's the only person I know who is as into this. And I would say that you're very fair. You know, you used to write for OutKick, and I think people might assume a certain set of assumptions based on that. That is not what I've come to know you as. You know, I think you can, without even having to do the various caveats Biden voter, whatnot. But I think because you wrote there, there's this sort of thought that, oh, okay, well, everything you believe is what Clay Travis believes, which, you know, it's not a logic that people apply to the Ringer necessarily. That anything anybody says there is reflective or in alignment with Bill Simmons. But I mean, is that something that you have found has been difficult in just trying to be an objective arbiter, as I believe you've tried to be on these topics?
You know, that's a funny question, because I actually thought when I went to OutKick, and I left about a month ago, but when I went there, I thought that I was going to lose like a lot of sources and friends in the media, people who kind of like have longstanding dislike for Clay, whether he was like directly critical of them or not. He certainly has his fair share of detractors. He also has a lot of friends in the media, but he has his fair share of detractors. And I thought I was going to lose those. What ended up happening, it wasn't that I ended up losing any of my friends or sources in media, but outside of the media bubble, there would be times where Clay, or when Jason Whitlock was there, they would say something or write something, and it would cross over into like personal friends and family. And all of a sudden, I would be the kind of backboard for, well, how can you work for somebody who said this? Like, my sister would get text messages from someone she went to like law school with about it. And I had no concept that things were going to like bleed into personal life. But as far as being like seen as an objective media observer, like sometimes it would come up. But I think that most people who I had pre-existing relationships with understood and respected my like desire to be fair and objective regardless of where I work.
Yeah. And it's funny, because there are people still there who talk about these issues, but it is definitely from a point of view. You know, it is definitely fit into the paradigm of NBA too woke, and that's why it's going down in flames. I know a lot of people think that that's my perspective. I think that it's multi-factor what has happened with the NBA, and we will get into it. I think what's happened with the NBA, as we've both discussed, it's on such a big scale. And the thing people don't understand is the scale. And I think we can get into that just off the bat. Do you want to talk at all about this, about how what people might be missing about the NBA story when they're talking about what last night's viewership was, or this viewership compared to last year? What is going on in your estimation with the NBA that is maybe even different from the other sports?
Yeah, so I think where the two places we should start there are with the NBA Finals and Christmas. And I think we should start with Christmas, because that was more recent, and then work back towards NBA Finals. So this year for Christmas, 2020 versus 2019, the average of the five games was down 16.5% from last year and 25.3% from 2 years ago. So we hear this in all sorts of things where you talk about the pandemic, quote, accelerating trends that already existed. And that's where I think you and I agree, is where people are attributing all of the NBA drop in the last 2 years to the pandemic. It's rather a continuation of a trend that has been happening over 2 to 3 years in the micro. And not necessarily a trend, but a fact that the league is substantially less popular than it was during the Michael Jordan years in the 1990s. So on Christmas, the marquee primetime game, Mavs-Lakers, was down 20.1% from the primetime game last year, and it was down 32% from the Lakers-Warriors game in 2018. And then if you go on the 5 p.m. ABC game, that was a game between the Nets and Celtics that averaged 4.278 million viewers. Last year in that time slot, Rockets-Warriors was 6.55 million and Sixers-Celtics was 7.347 million. So what that means is that the second best game in the NBA Christmas slate was down about 35% from last year and 42% for the year before. Now, what people will say is, well, this year that game was going up against Saints Vikings, but this was like not an NFL game that had dramatic playoff implications. It was like kind of just like, I mean, not a totally regular game.
Well, and also in most years you have an NFL game on Christmas. And it's people talked about that as though this was an out of nowhere thing that never happens. And no, there were some past Christmases where eight figure number from your main game and great overall, even though there has been an NFL game, maybe with more juice than the one that was on 2020. And it just hasn't been as much of a factor.
Right. And so the bottom line is, and look, the NBA did have some positives coming out of Christmas, to be fair, like the ESPN exclusive games were actually up versus last year. But I think that it was like a sign of a bigger problem that their main marquee games were down so much, not just year over year, but on a 2-year basis. And we've also seen that with the NBA finals. So there's the obvious caveat that this year the finals were out of season and there weren't fans at the games. And if you go back and watch like any sporting event from before the pandemic and you see how much the fans are involved in the broadcasting of the game, it's like pretty wild that the games are like look as good as they do without the fans. But like even with that caveat, I mean, this year the NBA Finals averaged 7.45 million viewers. Last year it was 15.14 million viewers. That was a year, and so we're down 55% versus last year. This year featured LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers, really the marquee player and the marquee franchise in the league, and it was still down 55% versus an NBA Finals in 2019 that featured a team from Canada and the Raptors. And yeah, the Warriors were in it, but as you know, they were depleted from an injury standpoint, and so they were really limping along in there. And so 2 years ago, the number was 17.56 million. And 3 years ago, it was over 20 million. So in a 3-year period, the NBA Finals ratings are down almost 2/3. And so,
and they probably, I'm just going to interject very quickly. And it's because we don't mention this a lot. It gets almost too complicated for people, but it probably is down 2/3 because they count it differently. Now they're counting out of home. Meaning that your hotels, your hospitals, your airports, whatever you're getting from those, and it's a little depleted, obviously, because of the pandemic. But that just started getting counted literally, I think, before maybe it was the conference finals for the NBA. So when you incorporate that, it is probably down 2/3. You know, you're down 2/3, as you were saying, 2017, 20 million, 17.5 million in 2018, 15 million in 2019, 7.45 with the out of home bump in 2020. That's the trajectory.
Right. It was the lowest watched game one through game six of the NBA Finals on record, like every game one ever, every game two ever, and so on. And so the like previous low was like, I think like 9 million in 2007. It was like the Spurs sweep of the Cavs. And so like, I mean, that this is much worse than that because the numbers generally go up as you get to like games 5, 6, and 7 or whatever. And so there wasn't a game 7 this year, but it's a 2/3 drop from 3 years ago. And so that's the point that I think people miss when they say that everything is down in the pandemic. Like the college football national title game was down like, I don't know, 25 or 27%, whereas the semifinals were relatively flat year over year. The NFL was maybe down like 7% all year. The Super Bowl, depending on how you count it, was down like 8 or 9%, or maybe even as high as 15% if you count this year's numbers, which include out-of-home viewership, versus last year's when you add in the out-of-home viewership that came in later than the initial date. But like 10, 9, 15%, Ethan, is not two-thirds. And so there's a matter of like proportionality that in an era where other things are slipping, the NBA is slipping more. And the people who love the NBA, instead of arguing that this isn't happening, they should be trying to diagnose some of the underlying factors, because I think when the NBA is more popular, it benefits everybody who covers the NBA.
Yeah, and I just enjoy it as somebody who loves basketball. I like when more people are into it. It's one of the reasons why even before I had a job that had anything to do with it, I enjoyed when the Warriors were doing well. I liked seeing everybody around the Bay Area get really into it. What you're talking about with the scale, we can make an easy analogy for this. We could say, hey, every country's had coronavirus cases, right? Every country's had coronavirus cases. They all had coronavirus cases. But Australia isn't the United States in that respect, right? I mean, it's not a hard concept to grok. And I think the only reason why so many people have been unable to, and I know people within the NBA who had no idea any of this was happening. And the reason they have no idea any of this is happening is because, let's face it, the NBA has a very aggressive PR arm. I'm not even criticizing. This is what they do. You know, this is their job in a way, and they're very good at just changing the frame. Whatever just happened, change the frame and do it immediately after something happens, to frankly mislead people as to what's been going on. And it's been rather successful. It hasn't been successful in actually making more people watch basketball, but it's been pretty successful in getting people not to notice it within the industry. Plus, I do think that there is this culture war aspect of the people who are against basketball are against my politics. I don't want to give them any fuel, and I'm just going to try to join in that obfuscation effort. I mean, I remember the World Series ratings came out, and the World Series, basically, baseball is down on the slower trajectory of being down a little bit more every year, except when you have the rare Indians Cubs World Series. And so last year's World Series was the least watched of all time, I guess, in the modern era. And I saw a bunch of people who are NBA partisans trumpeting that and going like, oh, what's the issue? Is it, you know, that they're too woke? And I'm looking at this. I'm like, do you guys know that this World Series, that's the least watched one of all time, is averaging over 2 million viewers a game more than the NBA Finals that just happened? Like, you don't understand what's happening. You don't get the scale of this. This is crazy. This is not a normal thing in sports where you suddenly lose half your audience in a very brief amount of time. If it was the NFL, I don't think we'd be talking about anything else.
Well, yeah, I mean, so that's the thing, is like when the NFL was having its rating struggles in 2016 and 2017, and the NBA was having these 20 million NBA Finals numbers, there were a lot of people in the media asking if the NBA was going to catch up with the NFL. And not only has that not happened, and they've just gone in completely divergent directions. But well, yeah, to your point about the PR, the specific instance that we can both think of happened a few weeks ago, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but they put out a release that said through, let's call it 25 games or something, I don't know, or 3 weeks or whatever it was, however long it had been in the NBA season, they said that it was up dramatically compared to the corresponding beginning of last season. And a lot of outlets that have like people who are like good pros and nice people took the release and said NBA up big. But what the NBA didn't disclose in the release, and what a lot of the people who wrote about it didn't understand, was that this year's first X Games included Christmas, which even in a depleted state are by far the most watched games that the NBA puts on in the regular season versus last year, which was like a bunch of November and December games that a lot of them went up directly against the NFL and did not include Christmas. And so when like, I don't know that it's necessarily even helpful for the NBA to do the like everything is fine thing with that ratings release, because it just makes the people who are paying close attention think that they're hiding something.
Yeah. I mean, that's this broader question of should so much of the PR be focused on trying to I don't want to say polish a turd, but you know what I mean. And we can we'll get to it later, because I think we are in alignment that this season, I don't think is below expectations, considering everything else. Right. And we'll discuss why and what that could mean going forward. But I'm more of the opinion, like what you're saying, that you're better off just presenting reality and not getting so into the modality of trying to get everybody think that the momentum is going the other way. And I think that you've got a better chance of solving a problem if you admit to the problem. You've got a better chance of hitting the target if you're aiming for it. And the NBA has had substantial viewership declines. Now, maybe it has nothing to do with the politics, or maybe you'd say it's not even the politics. It's morality, damn it. It transcends politics. You can't think of it like politics is one way people think about it. And then it's, okay, well, let's say that's the case. Where are the other aspects that they can improve upon where they're suffering? Because for something this large to happen, it has to be multi-factor. It just has to be. And people get into this fallacy of saying it's this or it's that, and it's like, no, it's a lot of things, and it all reaches this cumulative point where it's having a massive impact. And I just think it's insane, frankly, completely bonkers, that I'm some sort of weirdo in my industry for noticing that half the viewership left. Like, that's not a small thing that happened over a half decade, right? That is a big deal. This is crazy. It's crazy that I'm regarded as crazy for talking about it. I'm sorry for ranting, but it is a frustration.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
No, I think I'm in a similar boat where, I mean, to be fair, like the NBA and ESPN and Turner, they should advocate for themselves. I don't think you or I have any issue other than, like, I think that that one release that we just talked about was probably bad strategy. Like, I mean, they should advocate for themselves and say that everything is really popular. But no, I do want to go into all of the variables, because I think that when we bring it up, they have alienated Trump supporters as a league, and people think that it's just like bad to even mention that these people have purchasing power. That's and so you can say that it like they should be doing everything that they do to trumpet civil rights and equality. And I actually don't disagree with that, but it's not like a made up thing that all of like the China stuff, like they have oppressed religious minorities, the Uyghur Muslims, in concentration camps. It's been designated as a genocide by human rights organizations. Like they have forced abortions and sterilizations, and China is putting out releases to say that the women who are being forced not to have babies are liberated. And so when you see like LeBron James say that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, but at the same time criticize Daryl Morey for supporting Hong Kong democracy protesters, it's easy to see like, okay, are you doing civil – it's easy to ask, are you doing civil rights for branding, or do you universally believe in civil liberties? And so that's like one of the many other factors that has, in my opinion, contributed to the decline in viewership. But there's also been hurt stars. There's been hurt stars. There's been like the aesthetics of the game where they just shoot a million threes now is not fun. And there's a very like fragmented content marketplace that has grown more and more specialized over the last 20 years. But I think all of these, to your point, are part of the bigger issue.
Yeah. And it should be said that post Daryl Morey, that was the biggest drop. I mean, that was the biggest, I guess, maybe outside of pandemic, where every sport takes a hit. But that's when you really started to see the free fall. It was trickle, 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 flood. And it's complicated. I think I was interviewed by Josh Levine of Slate, and he was finding it so inconceivable that anybody's viewing habits would be impacted by China. And his position was that these people are basically liars, that they care about this, and these are people who don't like the NBA anyway. And those people exist, right? There are people who don't like the NBA, and maybe have a right-leaning perspective. And they're just going to use this as a cudgel to hit the NBA with. They don't care about the Uyghurs. They don't care about Hong Kong, whatever, whatever. But there's also this other element where it's weird to a lot of American NBA fans that you can't talk about China because the league has all this money from China. And internally, I mean, I know players who are involved in the players union, as well as, you know, as well as ownership, as well as team executives, that will privately admit that, yeah, the China Daryl Morey situation hurt them at home. They don't say it publicly. And by the way, they're still going to take the money from China, that 15% of BRI. So it's not impacting decision making, but that clearly had an impact. You know, I know correlation isn't causation, but that was a hell of a correlation right there. And it is probably causation. And to what you're also saying, I do think that there are all these other factors that nobody's necessarily to blame for, but you've got all the movement of stars all over the place. You've got the load management. You've got, you've got superstars who just seem unhappy, by Adam Silver's own admission, as I wrote about. He's talking about that they're unhappy. It's hard to really market that to the public, this product that's supposed to be fun, when it seems like the biggest names in it are just constantly miserable. So there is this overall cloud, I think, that's been hanging over the league the past few years. And it is incumbent on the league to solve it and to get things going in the right direction, which can always happen. But you have to admit to the problem. And the amount of denial right now, and I've just seen it. There's always an excuse. There's always a reason over the past half decade. Always a reason. Well, I think in the scope of the last 5 years, and really last 3 years, there should be an admission that something's gone wrong. If you care at all about the NBA being popular in the US, which I do, and maybe some people don't, and that's fine. But if you do care, and a lot of the people who say they don't care enough to argue about it, so I guess they do care, then you know, maybe it's time to discuss these things. Maybe it's time to discuss how the NBA could improve and fix things.
You know, you made a bunch of good points there. And I do want to reiterate that, like, I do think that it's very plausible that a large tranche of, like, Donald Trump voters – have turned away from the league. Well, and
I want to make a quick point on that. I've seen market research from about a couple of years ago that would suggest that because people know that the NBA is the blue state league, right? And that's informing a lot of the conversation about it on this issue. But basically, for every, you know, for every two Democrat voters, when I was looking at the market research, you have one Republican voter. Now you can take away from that, wow, well, NBA fans, I mean, NBA fans are overwhelmingly Democrat. You know, it's 2-1. And that's true. That's true. That's a landslide election if you're holding an election. But that's also Tony Gwynn's batting average is 1 out of 3. You know?
Like, yeah.
I think there's this, again, it's all about the scale. I think people make this assumption and they go, well, nobody who votes Republican watches the NBA or is an NBA fan. So no, most are Democrat voters, but there is this large segment that isn't. And that segment is probably just in the way that, I mean, there's this other irony where people who deny this thesis are people who would be the first to give up on a sport if the sport started conveying a political messaging that they disliked. I mean, that's the grand irony of it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if their favorite baseball team had MAGA hat night, and they would probably say, I'm never watching again. And that particular individual in the media finds it inconceivable that there are people who are inclined towards the opposite direction who might actually turn off the TV. But yeah, that's just the point I wanted to make. I think it's about 2-1. And so if all of that one leaves, that's a significant fall off.
It is. And I mean, Adam Silver made the point himself, I think, when he said in an interview with Rachel Nichols that, like, even people who agree with the causes don't necessarily want it embedded into the games. You've made this analogy before where if you go to McDonald's and you order a Big Mac and they give you like sushi, you're not going to be happy about it. Like if you want to watch political coverage, you'll go to like Fox News or yeah. MSNBC or CNN. And I understand there's like a lot of people who say that it's privileged to think that sports and politics should not be intertwined at all, and that this isn't political, it's a human rights issue. And I understand all that, but that doesn't change the behavior of the consumer. If the consumer wants it to be like a meaningful athletic competition to serve as a distraction from the rest of the day, and the NBA isn't delivering that, then the consumer has any number of options like Netflix or really any type of like video or video game content to go and seek that escape. But I do also want to get to the basketball elements, because I think that these haven't been spoken about enough. I think there's been a lot of conversation about whether and the extent to which politics has impacted NBA viewership, but not as much focus on the aesthetics of the game. So you mentioned load management. It started with Greg Popovich and the Spurs. LeBron started to do it and got a bunch of blowback for it. And to his credit, now really takes the regular season seriously to almost a comical extent, where he's playing like too many minutes and gunning for the MVP award transparently. But at least he's taking the regular season seriously. But it continued with Kawhi, and we're seeing it with Kyrie Irving and the Nets, where it's like unclear if these players are actually unhealthy or if they're kind of synthesizing ailments. Like, I know players always have banged up bodies, so you can always say there's a reason that they need rest. But it comes to a point where it's like, if the Clippers don't care about the regular season, if the Nets don't care about the regular season, then why should any of us care?
Yeah. And then the issue with that is, the players are far more likely to lock in for the postseason than the fans are. If you haven't really been carrying a lot of those fans throughout the regular season, I don't know how likely they are to go, oh, wow, now it's game time. Now it matters. I'm locked in. So I think that is this other aspect. And you've talked about the aesthetic aspects of the game, and it's really hard to know because how do we even measure it, what people want? But I do think it's gotten a little goofy. Like, the balance does seem out of whack. And I think that there's this platonic ideal that people want from an NBA game. I think they might want a score that is around 100, maybe 110, and it goes back down to around 100 during the postseason. But once you start seeing these 145 to 135, and it's three-pointer, I do think at a certain point, the idea that more scoring good, you have diminishing returns and it starts to work against you. You don't want it to be like what it was in the early 2000s to mid 2000s. You don't want 72 to 63, but double that. I think double that might also be an issue.
Yeah. And so this is like another thing where Adam Silver has a much better reputation than Rob Manfred in the like kind of sports media marketplace that we've discussed before. And part of that is because Silver sounds enthusiastic about the sport and Manfred doesn't. Manfred is constantly harping on what's wrong with the sport. But I actually think that it's to Manfred's credit that he's bringing in Theo Epstein to like kind of undo some of the analytic things that his like strategy and the strategy of some others helped break, and really try and make it so that baseball is less fixated on strikeouts and home runs and has more excitement on the base paths. And so my former boss, Jason McIntyre, tweeted this last night. There's currently 18 players making three or more three-pointers a game. 5 years ago, that's not that long ago, it was only three: Steph, Clay, and Damian Lillard. He said Rozier and Gary Trent are averaging 7 3-point field goal attempts per game. Reggie Miller never attempted that many per game. And so the game has really changed in perceptible ways. And I'm not saying you can blame the analytics people for understanding the expected value of a three-pointer is greater than the expected value of a two-point shot. But when the analytics start to break the aesthetics of the game, I think the league should be doing things like either moving the three-point line back or doing, I don't even know, making like a two-pointer worth 2.5 if it's outside the paint. There's like a million different things that they could do to tinker with it. But right now, it's not like fun to watch the strategy.
The main thing they could do is to make it easier for big men, because they really tried to make life difficult with their rule changes in the early 2000s. I think it was successful. And I think that actually, in a funny way, that can be looked at as an example, and maybe it's gone too far, as you're saying, but it's a good example of how you have the power to course correct when you are declining in interest from fans. Because the NBA post Jordan had this lull, and it was because of Jordan not being there anymore, but it was also because you had those 72 to 63 scores. The game bogged down. And what did they do? Did they just lie to themselves and say that we're more popular than ever before? Did the surrounding media keep telling them that they were more popular than ever before? No. Back then, everybody admitted that the NBA was in a real funk. And so David Stern changed the rules of the NBA. And the result of that was a more free-flowing game and 7 seconds or less from the Suns, which I do think they're underrated in how they completely turned that ship around. And then you had the beginning of the LeBron saga and everything else. And the NBA got some positive momentum that they rode all the way into, you know, I don't know when we can really pinpoint when it started to go the other direction. You know, it seems like you've got kind of you've got two big post Jordan lulls, the immediately afterwards, and then it goes up, and then what we're going through right now. But the point of it is, they tried to solve the problem and it worked. And right now you're arguing that there's a problem today. So maybe they should try to solve it. And well, it could work.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yeah, but the other thing is, and as we've discussed privately, I think we'll talk about now, is that the NBA isn't super incentivized to change it because even in light of their declining popularity, because of the fragmented marketplace that we talked about before, there's still a crucial element of the cable and satellite bundle. And as these like OTT platforms pop up and kind of there are a lot of them are spending more than they're getting back in revenue and kind of the hopes of gaining long-term subscribers who just never
they're trying to get a monopoly so they can charge whatever. This is my layman's stupid take on it. And so they're going to overpay for differentiated products like the NBA. So I want to say this right here, right now, because I think we're also in agreement on this. And maybe Jade should clip it, because here's what's going to happen. The NBA is going to sign a TV deal that is going to be substantially larger than their last TV deal. And people are going to come to us and go, what the hell? You've been warning as though you've been like Chicken Little talking about the sky falling. And look at the NBA. They're signing this great TV deal. I think that we're almost talking about this because it informs what's happening. I think maybe the NBA has started to scuffle because they're so insulated from consequence monetarily. And I think what we're probably going to see is an NBA that has half the viewership that it once had that's going to get twice the TV money. You know, is that a realistic outcome of all this?
It is a realistic outcome in the next several years, although I don't think that it's realistic that rights are going to go up forever. There's an article in The Guardian in January that the English Premier League is bracing for a 10% decline in their domestic rights, which is going to add up to like potentially like £500 million, which is about $700 million a year, because it's now just at a point in the UK where Sky doesn't have really formidable competition for the rights. Now we're in a place in America now where ESPN and ABC are married to the NBA through Disney's partnership, yeah. And I don't expect that to change before the next right deal. AT&T needs the NBA for their portion of the cable bundle too, and there's been murmurs out there that it's possible that NBC is going to buy Warner Media from TNT. So that's like from AT&T. So that's TNT, TBS, perhaps HBO, and to make Peacock on the level of like Disney Plus and Netflix. And if that's the case, that's probably only going to help the NBA, because now we've got an OTT platform and a broadcast network that can benefit from the differentiated games that the NBA provides.
I should add something that might get aggregated. I've heard rumblings about Amazon getting in on NBA rights as well. So I don't know at the moment if that's what's going to happen. I don't think they're going to get a huge NBA package or piece of it. It might be more of a dabble, but that is something I've heard. That is a possibility in the immediate future.
They'd love that. I mean, at like the NBA Tech Summit last year, it was about a year ago this past weekend in Chicago, they had like panels where like Mark Cuban and James Dolan were on a panel with like seven other people and had to like scratch and claw for airtime. But they had a panel with Amazon that it was just like a one-on-one conversation. So every sports league would love Amazon to get in on those rights, but I have no idea kind of how seriously they're going to and how much money they're going to think like is worth it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I know people who are in this world of the streaming wars. And it is the Wild West on acid. Nobody knows what the hell anything should cost. They often make weird mistakes that you just would never expect because they'll get the rights to some TV show and then have no idea that some other service has that TV show. They'll assume they have it exclusively and go, wait a second, we don't. It is a very strange thing happening. The industry isn't, you might think that, hey, these guys know what they're doing. They know the lay of the land, all these broadcasters, all these channels. But really, it's been completely funhouse mirror crazy. And in that confusion, it actually seems like people are throwing stupid money around instead of just being cautious.
Yeah, but like, I guess the question we don't know the answer to is what's the bottom of the cable and satellite bundle? So it's gone from about a little bit over 100 million subscribers for like ESPN about a decade ago to a little bit over 80 million now. So they've lost about a fifth of the people who are paying $10 a month for the combination of ESPN and ESPN2. How many people are going to abandon this bundle as like HBO Max and Peacock and Netflix and Hulu continue to provide more and more and more differentiated content? And that's the other reason that sports are so valuable right now is the only thing that people are watching that you can put ads on are sports and news. And so like 8 years ago, there would be so many entertainment shows that were more watched than NBA games. But now, even though the NBA viewership has declined by half, scripted entertainment programming that's ad supported has declined by even more than that. And so there's a premium on what you can charge advertisers because they don't have as many television outlets to put their money on. You can say over the long run that money is going to go to podcasts or like through other digital platforms, not necessarily watching a show, but right now it hasn't yet. And so that's why like sports are just so valuable even in the face of declining viewership.
This might be a digression, but I'm wondering because I don't know anything about the fight game, as they call it. But is that UFC deal for ESPN, ABC, just a crazy bargain that they got? What is it? Was it 1.5 million total over 5 years? Because I just look at the last fight. I don't know anything about these guys. I gather it was a matchup people were excited about. I hadn't heard of either fighter. And it was a pay-per-view, I think, for maybe $70 on ESPN Plus that around nearly 800,000 people paid for. I saw that and I went, oh my God, this is, am I wrong to look at that and go, what a deal for ESPN to have UFC?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the reason why it like took so long for ESPN to issue a statement defending their reporter, Ariel Helwani, after Dana White called him a douche last week, is that like the UFC has been a like supremely successful business partnership for them. So all of like every quarter ESPN and Disney tout how much ESPN Plus is growing in subscribers. And I'd wager that a majority of those subscribers who have joined since UFC have joined because of UFC. And wow. So it's like a little bit of a niche product. But to your point, 800,000 people paying $70 for a pay-per-view, that money starts to add up. And ESPN and Disney almost benefited from what Sky is benefiting from with the EPL, where it's just it's a brand that in the UFC that is like, you know, you don't want to, like, if you're at a Silicon Valley dinner party, it's not something that you're going to like brag about, you know, like being a partner with them.
Yeah, you aren't, and yet the popularity tends to grow because people just have that that instinct. They like fights. They like to see it. I know people who wouldn't fit the stereotype of being UFC fans who are heavy into it. And so it's interesting that has become such a supplementary product for ESPN. As far as the NBA is concerned, maybe what we're looking at, and we can transition to looking at this season, is that the NBA, yeah, it's lost a lot of viewership, but maybe it has a high floor, right? Maybe what we're looking at, because I don't know what the numbers are going to be. I mean, they're going to be pumped up a little bit by the out-of-home aspect we talked about. But I think that they're better than what my expectations would have been. If you told me that they're going to do this season, not even in a bubble where they can really devote a bunch of resources to sprucing it up, but in these cavernous empty arenas. And I do think that the fans are part of the background and inform your sense of how big the game is. I would have expected worse. You know, on most nights on TNT or ESPN, you're getting over a million people watching. Do you feel the way I feel that the season, considering all that's happened, isn't below expectations?
Oh, I'd agree with that. I'd almost say that aside from Christmas, they're probably surpassing them. And some of those reasons are obvious. I mean, Steph and the Warriors are back. Maybe they're not title contenders, but they're still relevant factors. It looks like they're, like, as long as they don't have other injuries, they should make it into the playoffs. So, I mean, they're playing competitive games and beating some good teams. The Nets are something that didn't exist last year in terms of anywhere near the interest. Now, part of that is a depletion of the Rockets, but you have Durant back from an injury, and he's a really fun player to watch, paired with Kyrie Irving and James Harden. And so that's going to be exciting. I don't think that it's going to get back to 2 or 3 years ago levels at this point, but I think the NBA is just kind of has tunnel vision for soldiering on, and we're going to get these done and we're going to come out of it stronger. What I'm interested to see, though, is if they start talking about year over year with the NBA finals and the other playoff viewership, which are almost certainly going to be substantially above where they were last year, presuming health of the stars, just because of it's going to be the normal time of the year. More stars are back from injuries. There's more exciting markets and teams that are in there. But last year they spent so much time saying, oh, you can't count these ratings. So are they going to count versus last year, or are they going to count versus 2 years ago?
We know the answer to that. They're going to count versus last year. And it's going to, again, because people just look at these things as fodder for whatever claim they want to make. There isn't going to be an honest analysis that, oh my God, we lost like 10 million fans over the past few years. It's going to be, we gained back 1 million of those 10 million. And that's the only story we're really sticking to. It's going to be that. It's going to be compare it to last season, everything way up, And I think the year-over-year thing, this is maybe nerdy and niche, but it is a way that people get sideways on this topic, because if all you're looking at is what happened last year, it's easy to not understand what's happening in the broad sweep. I mean, I made some waves in August writing about this topic for a variety of reasons, but one of them was just I crunched the numbers in quotations because it was not difficult math, and I said it's down 45% versus a decade ago, basically. For the network games, it seemed like nobody in my industry knew about that. And I think one of the reasons why is because it's all versus last year. If you always say versus last year, you're going to lose track of what's happening in the longer story. And that's what's going to, that's pretty much inevitable. But I think the question is, can the NBA gain some positive momentum? I mean, it's not nothing to just get through the season, considering everything that's happening. And I do agree that there are some storylines that are more interesting. I think, you know, in a weird way the game is talked about in-house at ESPN State Media doesn't help them sometimes, because they should be playing up the Brooklyn Nets as villains you should hate. I mean, that's what would make the Nets even more interesting. The Nets are already pretty interesting to people. In the kind of 2010, that sort of range, they would be playing them up as the biggest prima donna diva mercenaries that are so fun to root against, in the way that they did with LeBron and the Heat. Now, some of that went too far, and I think part of what we're living through is an overcorrection from what happened. But if you're just constantly telling the fans that they're bad and something's morally wrong for them with them if they dislike this Nets team or how it came together, it doesn't give you that delicious contrast that you might want, where you've got, you know, lunch pail hometown Giannis and the Bucks versus the evil Nets empire. That's what sells. That's what people are into.
No, instead, they're like, Giannis just signed an extension, so when's he going to demand a trade now? But the other thing that's going to work in the NBA's favor over the next several years is that athletes in all sports are extending their careers compared to what we were used to before, based on a combination of diet and training. So, I mean, you see Tom Brady playing at a Super Bowl winning level into his mid-40s. You see WWE wrestlers who are having careers like 10 or 15 or 20 years longer than, like, I don't want to sound like awful, but like the Undertaker and like people like that are having careers that expand much longer than what their life expectancies would have been 20 years ago. And I think we're going to be seeing that in the NBA too, with like LeBron and Durant. And like, I mean, Durant has come back pretty much. He's as good as he was before from an Achilles injury. People didn't used to do that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And not only is it good to see divorced from the business, but for the business, I think it helps to have name recognition, and it takes a while for the normative casual fan to develop a relationship or an idea about a certain player and be interested in them. And the more you can string that along, I think is to your benefit. Now, I think the NBA's issue right now might be in creating new stars. And that's this other topic where it's interesting to watch the NBA. In the bubble, they were really starting to just admit that this Giannis thing isn't happening for the consumer. Just isn't happening. We're putting his game at 11 a.m. on the West Coast because he doesn't resonate. And conversely, we're trying to wedge in the Pelicans into the bubble, even if they don't deserve it, because at that point, out of shape Zion, who's looked really good recently, the American public is interested in them or in him. And wants to know, and that's the star that you can create. Do you think the NBA right now is kind of struggling to create that next star, or is that something that you just got to be patient and eventually it happens?
Well, you brought me to my biggest pet issue in all of sports, so I'm happy that you brought this up.
Oh, we finally got to it. Nice.
The NBA and the NCAA need to figure out a way for the best players to play 2 years in college. Look how much the NFL is going to be helped by the fact that everybody knows who Trevor Lawrence is when he enters the league, and he's had several years of meaningful championship level competition at Clemson. Like, instead, the NBA is trying to push players to the G League. Like, Jalen Green is playing like 11 a.m. on ESPN2. Like, if you don't have Twitter, there's no way that you're seeking that out. And like, to your point, Zion Williamson, the reason that they're wedging him in and he's so popular, and this is rare now, is that he was playing at Duke and everybody was watching him. And so if they had their players coming through this pipeline where we get more familiar with them, not just through like GIFs and Twitter videos and YouTube videos, but through like actual competition, I think that the public would be more invested in their young stars.
That's a possibility. And I still like what the NBA is trying with the G League. And because the ultimate goal would be that you are the farm system and you own those games and you get more interest in them and more people are watching them, and the NCAA has collapsed, which I don't think the NCAA is going to collapse, but it's wobbly. You know, we didn't really talk about them, but I think that they might be disproportionately impacted college basketball just because that atmosphere is not there. The campuses aren't really operational. You've got all this swirling stuff around them all the time. It just seems like they might be on the wane. And should the NBA really invest in trying to prop them up and try to organize this deal you're talking about, where maybe players are there 2 years and maybe you can get the players paid to keep them there 2 years? Maybe, or maybe now is not the time to prop them up. Maybe now is the time to try to stomp on their throat because they are a competing business. It's not exactly a free farm system, as Dan Lebatard has called them. They have games that are on during your games. When they do their national championship, you don't even have games because you don't want to go up against it because so many people are watching it. I just know that it can't be part way. They almost need to make a choice of, are we going to help the NCAA help us, or are we going to try to ruthlessly crush them and deprive them and deplete them of any and all talent and go all in on trying to make the G League for an audience of, God, I don't even know how many people. Maybe it has a million viewership ceiling. Who knows? But it kind of needs to be one or the other, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get your point, but I just think that with the fact that so many people have gone to these schools, they have already innate interest in them. And I don't think that that's something build from the ground.
Like, let's look at it, because I think it's real that Zion going to Duke helped brand him and make him somebody the average sports fan was interested in a way that if he had just come out of nowhere, you know, there would be murmurs about, man, you got to see this guy play, it's insane. But it wouldn't be the same thing and it wouldn't be the same way. But is that true of, I mean, does anybody care more about Kemba Walker because of his illustrious college career? Anthony Davis won a national championship and was fantastic at Kentucky. Do the Kentucky guys really get this bump in the way that Zion got it at Duke? I don't know. It seems a little specific to Zion and a little specific to Duke. And if you look at the NBA's great stars post Jordan, we're talking about Kobe and we're talking about LeBron, who didn't have that branding at all.
That's a fair point. And I mean, as far as AD goes, like I'm not saying this to be mean, but he doesn't have the charisma of Zion Williamson. And so I don't know that there's any way to have made him somebody that the public would be as interested in, given that just Williamson's like personality, even going beyond his talent, is like magnetic. If he wasn't a basketball player, he would be a performer doing something else. Like, so I guess I don't know the exact answer to your question, other than that we both agree that they need to figure out how to make these young stars bigger faster.
Yeah. Well, Jade's pointed out in the text, how, I mean, Kemba, maybe I'm selling him short. How many people who enjoy clams on their pizza watch NBA games because of Kemba's Kemba's Connecticut career?
I mean, it's a small state, so I'm not sure exactly how
Jade's father, this is breaking news here. Jade's father loves Kemba is the text I'm getting. So does
my father.
He updates me on Kemba's stats every time I see him. That's hilarious.
Well, there loves you him. Go. Well, maybe
Big what bump they in Connecticut.
They just need power schools to get these guys. That needs to be what happens. But yeah, man, college sports, college basketball. Am I wrong in feeling like I watch a game, I feel like I'm watching public access television. It just doesn't feel of the moment, and they might be in more trouble than some of these other entities.
Yeah, I mean, you either have to have gone to the school or grown up near the school that you're watching and have like a childhood affinity for them, or you need to be betting on it. Otherwise, it's not going to like win over other content. And we see that in like the numbers. There might be like two or three games a week. I think about all the college basketball games that there are on TV, and very few of them draw over a million viewers. I mean, like AEW wrestling, which I like, and it's I think it's like a very good show, but it outdraws like a vast majority of these Power Five college basketball games at this point.
That is quite the drop for them. That just accelerates the decision-making process for the NBA. I'm more intrigued by the possibilities of the G League, but that's just because I'm hooked on watching Alan Smilagic, which I will watch in, I think, 2 hours from now. Very excited about the old Geach there. Well, I think we've covered it. Is there any topic in the sports sphere that you want, because we did hit on one where you said this was your pet peeve. Is there any other topic additionally that we should hit?
Let me think about that. Well, the thing we didn't talk about is gambling, and that's like another thing that is going to be a headwind for every sports league, because they all have, but it's not in the biggest states yet. So like, if you're sick of hearing about gambling now, wait till it's legal in New York, Florida, Texas, and California, because people aren't going to shut up about it. And I'm a little bit of the opinion that I'm not sure that the gambling companies are going to make as much money as everybody thinks that they are. Yes. David Purdom, who's a reporter for ESPN, every month he talks about how much money Nevada makes from slots versus blackjack versus sports gambling. And slots are a bigger business by 1,000%. So I guess if these gambling companies get the market share to eventually inevitably deliver mobile gambling slots, then they're going to make a lot of money. But it's going to be huge for the leagues and the teams and the players regardless, because of how much endorsement money is going to come in. And that's another thing that, at least in this rights cycle, before sports gambling is a mature business, is going to give the NBA a much bigger rights package, even as viewership has declined.
That's interesting, because I do think that the gambling thing I'm bearish on, because the way they were approaching it was almost that this was going to revolutionize everything, and you're going to get this big tranche of people who are into gambling and they want to get into the NBA. And I think what we've discovered is it's a very small population of people who want to lay money on the spread that the Hawks and Grizzlies are involved in, that you're getting that gambling.
Well, it isn't in the four biggest states yet.
Yeah. I just don't think the NBA, and I say this as somebody who loves NBA gambling and had an NBA gambling column, I'm just not so convinced there's a big population of people who are into that. That doesn't seem to be a normie thing to do. And so it just struck me as almost a get rich quick scheme from the NBA and these other leagues. And I actually have some trepidation about it. I don't know how much you want your brand to be wrapped up in all of that. But we will continue to monitor that situation.
It hasn't seemed to be an issue for European soccer. I mean, they've got some of those teams have the gambling thing on their jersey. Like, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, there are going to be like tragic stories that come out of it because, I mean, at least like you can't gamble on margin like people can on Robinhood. But there's certainly going to be situations where it like destroys families and so on.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a little unseemly. And I say that as somebody who enjoys it, but it's not exactly family entertainment, I guess is what I'm saying. And it's worked out for the NFL. I just don't know how it'll work out for the NBA, but we will monitor it and we will have you back in the future if it starts getting going. You're an excellent guest, Ryan. Do you have anything to promote? Anything we should know about?
If anybody listened to this all the way through and thinks that I'm smart, I would love a job in this business.
There you go.
Hire this man.
Hire this man. I don't know if we want to leave that in. I have a whole theory that you almost can't tell people you want it. You got to play hard to get. You got to be like
I'll boss
like
a little bit.
Yeah, like a job pickup artist. Like, okay,
I've got like 1.9 kids though, so eventually I'd like to reverse my cash burn.
I love that you talk about it the way we talk about these ratings. You got a 1.9. That's pretty good.
Well, it's coming in like 3 weeks, so it's nice. Yeah,
well, congratulations. Mazel tov.
Wow,
that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Ryan. I feel better informed. I could talk to you about this stuff for hours and hours and hours. It's fun to nerd out on. And I think it's not only interesting to see the industry dynamics, but just to see the shifting attitudes and opinions of the public. Great stuff. Check out any and all things Ryan does. Like I said, I think he is the best when it comes to viewership and business trends in sports. So give him a follow. What is your handle again, sir? What is it? Is this your name?
At Sports Rapport. Sports RAPPORT.
There you go. I'm an idiot who just internalized it as your actual name when it's not that at all. But thanks so much for stopping by, and thanks to the people for listening, and thanks to super producer Jade Hoy, who does a fantastic job not only producing it, but apparently he's chosen a hell of an intro song because so many people ask us about it, what the name of it is, but that's neither here nor there. We will be back next week. Everybody stay safe. Enjoy the season. Enjoy the oncoming spring. See ya.